Again, our agenda is here. So while Manu and maybe Kim are trying to connect everything to the various people for our agenda, for our who's here, let's go to the scribes list. So at the top I have Adrian. Is Adrian here? Nope. Benjamin Young, are you here? Let's see if I can go a little faster here. Christian, are you around? Not today. Okay. David Chadwick, are you on? Are you up for scribing?
Yeah. Just have to remove the mic, mute on my mic. Can you hear me?
Yeah. If you're up for scribing, that would be great. And I'll add you to the bottom of the list. Okay, so we have a scribe. So our agenda today, one last time, is here. And just to quickly review the overview of the agenda, we we'll have our normal IT note, our connections check, agenda review, introductions and reintroductions, announcements, progress on current action items, status of action items, and then we want to go as soon as we can to the presentation on zkLang by Jan Komenich and team. Do we have anything major that needs to be brought up and added as an agenda item? I'm not seeing anybody speak up. So do we have any people that are here, new here for the first time? Please go to IRC and type in question plus, and you will be added to the queue. A quick IT note in particular for people who are new to W3C Credentials Community Group. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you've not agreed to the group's IT policy, please refrain from considering any substantive contributions. You can join the Credentials Group officially by signing the IP policy. It's free at our regular website. Going on. Introductions and reintroductions. I don't see anybody new on reintroductions. Why don't we have Arno? Want to reintroduce yourself to everybody?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Chris. So, hi, my name is Arno Doros. I'm part of the Open Technology Group at IBM, focusing on Hyperledger for the last 2 years plus.
Thank you very much. So, moving through the announcements, we'd like to have an idea of who is going to be at Consensus in May. If we need to have any kind of outreach or other, casual meetings or otherwise at the Consensus Conference in New York City in May. It is likely that I will be there. I'm not sure. I think Drummond said he was going to be there. Okay, so I'm not seeing a whole bunch of people chiming up that they're going to be there in the IRC, so I'm going to remove that from the from the queue of agenda items. So we're planning on having this summer a DID verifiable credential outreach. And we're trying to find a target date. So this is kind of like a combination virtual hackathon and just trying to get more groups and people involved in showing off what DIDs and verifiable claims can do, in particular to the developer community. So we're seeking a target date. If you know that you want to be involved, please, give me some blackout dates. Like, you're going to be gone the month of August or whatever the thing is, so that we can begin to narrow down a couple of weeks to vote on. So, please let me know. Does anybody know of any major events this summer? The only one I know of is, I think the 1st and 2nd of August is the Decentralized Conference is meeting at the Internet Archive in San Francisco. So it's possible that we may want to do something that week if the first week of August is good for people. Any other comments before we go to the next agenda item on our outreach? Okay, I don't see any questions. Moving on. My Data Health Sticky. So quite a number of us are going to be at the My Data Conference in Helsinki the very last week of August. So we were talking about having a present what's been going on in the CCG and verifiable credentials there, and then possibly having on the Saturday after a salon to invite people to come in and kind of do a mini rebooting of a trust facilitated salon type of thing. So if you're near Helsinki, I hear Ryanair flights are cheap to Helsinki. That would be a good place to do. Is anybody else hearing me break up besides? Okay. Is it still choppy now?
Yeah, it's continuing to be choppy.
Yep. You've gone to gargle mode, Chris.
Yeah, all the lines super clear for me.
Manny, you said it's clear?
Lionel is. You're not. Well, you're clear now as well.
You just came back to clear, buddy.
Interesting. So, yeah, I'm through the phone bridge, which has been the most reliable in the past. We'll see. Let me know if I begin to garble up again. We are now beginning to keep track of our action items in the issues of the community repo. There are a number of items that are showing up there. Because I would like to get to the presentation by Jan, if you could look there, and if you have any comments or you're finished with any of these action items or have questions about these action items, I see a number assigned to Manu, unfortunately. feel free to bring it up or go ahead and close the items. Manna, do you have any particular comments on the list? Feel open to it. Okay.
No, other than, things are, I'm trying to process the verifiable credentials, lots of those issues, and at some point we'll move on to the DID spec. But I haven't been hearing that, not having those PRs into the DID spec are slowing people down.
Okay. That's a good summary. If you do have action items for the group, you're also welcome to add them yourselves to that issue. Just tag it as an action item. We also have a list We're trying to be more formal about our process of what is a work item. So right now we have registries, of which we have 4 work items, which we have, like, how many do we have now? 11 that have some measure of approval, and then we have 3 work items and 2 specs. So the specs are the ones that have been taken over by the verifiable credentials group. This would normally be the time for a review of these. Lionel, can you share with us, I mean, what's happening with the privacy and security requirements of the credentials ecosystem? Is that moving forward? Have people like Jan and his team looked it over? What's next with that document? When can we close it?
Thanks for giving me the floor. We finished the round of feedback, and then since then we didn't bring it to a conclusion. We would Jan is on this call, so it'd be great to ask Jan to check into it. Jan, we can share the link and see if you're comfortable.
Yes, please share the link.
Flow. Okay, so we'll give you that link, and I think we can commit to closing over the next few weeks. So in a horizon of like a month, we can implement the last changes, get Jan's okay, do a final round, and publish.
Okay. So if you've got comments about it, read it soon. Get your comments in. In particular, I know that I would like to post this document to dive deeper into the data minimization side of the equation. So I encourage people who have ideas about strategies and such around data minimization to comment there. Anybody else have something, an update on one of our work items that they want to share? Okay, I'm not going to call out any more today to get on directly to the ZK Lang. So, Jan, I'm going to give you the floor, and if you could introduce any of your teammates that are with you today. I see that there is a new copy of the presentation. If you've already downloaded it, you may need to re-download it. It's at the same link.
I'm not sure whether it's the same link, but there was the GitHub commit from Kim Hamilton on the chat, and at least that one is the right link.
That's the latest one you sent.
Great. Good. So I guess I can skip all what verifiable claims, or I guess now it's called verifiable credentials, are. So maybe we can all skip to maybe slide number 4. This is a very high-level overview of what verifiable claims or verifiable credentials are. So I mean, because it's a structure that defines what kind of claims you want, who the issuer is, who the what kind of signatures, or sort of what the metadata is, and all of that. And then, as you guys know, is in order to implement that or realize that, we need to boil it down to some privacy credentials, and so really going to slide number 5. So those credentials, I mean, you can't use X5 and I's, but you need something like CL signatures or privacy-aware signatures. You typically need to use zero-knowledge proofs in order to prove that you have a signature from somebody on some attributes. Maybe you need to use verifiable encryption to do some of those things. And actually, sort of mapping down the verifiable credentials format to the cryptography is sort of difficult, and I guess that's what we have been struggling with. And so on slide number 6, here's an example of how the crypto would look like if you do one of those verifiable credentials realize them as a cryptographic proof. And of course, here people joke, right? I mean, if you present that to any developers and saying, look, that's how you would have to implement that, it doesn't really work out. And so I guess going to slide six, so what we really need is some kind of mapping from the left-hand side where that's like the usage of the signature properties, so that's like a verifiable credential specification from the VC language document, which is copied from there. And so if you would want to realize that, I mean, it has something like age over 21, issuer being this, that date issued, this kind of credentials. And of course, now from this, you won't want to realize that, break it down to the cryptography, and so you would have to go to these formulas. Yeah, and I guess that's really hard. And so I think what we really need is like another abstraction layer. This really looks like number eight now. So I think that's what we want to do with CKLang. Have like an abstraction layer that abstracts away all the cryptographic formulas to like higher level concepts of credentials, encryption schemes, sort of that allow you to build like a library that then can be onto which the verifiable credentials spec can be mapped. So I guess that's really slide number nine here. So the goal would be have some kind of language onto which we can map from the verifiable claims or verifiable credentials, so that from where on we can then map it further down to the cryptographic algorithms. And so that would allow us to sort of prove claims in a very easy way, in a very privacy-friendly way, using this language without bothering with the cryptography. We could just stay... So I guess different from what we specified at the verifiable credentials, at verifiable credentials, you still talk about issuers, you talk about, I mean, it's sort of the level of URLs. For the CKLang, you would talk about public keys from issuer. You would no longer talk about dates, but you would talk about integers that encode those dates. You would no longer talk about over 21 or age over something, but you would talk about some integer being larger than some other integer. So it's a step further down in actually coding up things, but it still doesn't talk about crypto. So it's a layer in between. And of course that means if you want to use the CKLang library, say, you will still have to do some translation. So if you have an issuer, you would have to look up the public key of that issuer. If you want to have a date, you would have to figure out how that date is encoded in the credential of that issuer. So you would have to look into the credential spec, how those people encode that stuff. And once you have sorted that out, then you're ready to sort of write the specification in the CKLang. So you have, when you're given like a verifiable claims, referable credential definition, you have to do a translation into the CKLang. But still, you wouldn't do any crypto. It's like just attributes and public keys and what kind of cryptographic primitives, but at the high level. So the primitives would be credentials, encryptions, and so on.
Which slide are you on now?
So that would be slide number nine. And I guess just let's go to slide number 10. So I guess more like a structured view here in terms of what would be a potential implementation. So I guess at the top level, you would have like verifiable credentials. And then from those, you would map it down to the CKLang. And from CKLang, you would map it further down into the cryptographic primitive, signatures, encryption, range, and commitments. And of course, for all of those cryptographic primitives, you could have different visualizations. So signatures would be, it could be CL signature, it could be X, when I you insisted. Encryption could be R encryption, it could be loop encryption, it could be L encryption. Range would be like the libraries to prove that you're over 18, but actually rather we would prove that some attribute is between, 19, 20, and 2010 or something like that. So this is all based on integers. And so when you would add another new cryptographic primitive, you would just exchange those kind of building blocks. And of course, there's also stuff like issuance and key generation that would in some sense be in parallel to CKLang. It would also be using those primitives, but you could say you have like different protocols for issuance of credentials, and they would all use this, they could use different cryptographic primitives, but I guess the high level flow of that would all be the same. So that's why it would be like a higher level building block. Any questions so far?
Hi, this is Manu on the queue. So this is great. I really like the direction here. I skipped ahead a little bit to slide 11. So the assumption here, I think, is that zkLang would effectively plug into the linked data proofs kind of architecture, meaning that at the last face-to-face meeting, the verifiable claims working group face-to-face meeting, Nathan George, so the Sovereign Foundation, Evernim folks, and the rest of the folks in the group, thought that we should certainly have some presentation mechanism in verifiable credentials, and that would contain a set of proofs. And that would be basically the linked data proof specifications that outline how to do that. And zkLang, from my understanding of what you're proposing, Jan, is zkLang would be a certain type of proof mechanism that you'd plug in there. So what we see on slide 11 is, I think, the beginnings of what would go into kind of that proof block. Is that correct? Am I understanding the suggestion correctly?
I guess I think so, yes.
Okay.
Right. I mean, of course, if you would plug in whatever X509 credentials, you could plug those kind of credentials to the directly into the verifiable claims, and they would support the claims. But indeed, so I guess that's one way to realize those proofs.
Got it. The follow-up question from that then is that I don't see things like tails lists or counters or other things like that in the zkLang thing. What were your thoughts on how that stuff would be expressed in the proof block? Like there are large blobs of data that you need to pull in from time to time. My expectation was that pointers to those blobs of information, whether they're on a blockchain or an HTTPS URL, those would be a part of the proof that's put into the presentation. Is that correct? And are those missing from slide 11?
I guess pointers to the outside, I think those would have to be taken care into the translation from verifiable credentials to zkLang. So I think zkLang only deals with all the cryptographic values. So all inputs to zkLang have to be constants. I mean, they all have to be defined. You no longer have any pointers. So any mapping to pointers or anything should happen at the layer above.
Okay, thanks.
So maybe let me continue, and then I think some of that should be clearer because I have a couple of slides about mappings and sort of what we have in mind here. Okay, so slide number 11. So this, I guess, the first bullet would be how we would see, the semantics, the syntax of the language. So it would... For now, I'm using something high level, but I guess the real semantics would all be JSON objects, and it would be written in JSON. We see an example later on. But essentially, it's like a zero knowledge proof of knowledge, something like that, or a non-interactive one. You would have like the M2, M3. So that would be sort of the values of attributes that you would not reveal, but you just prove that you know them. And then the M4 one would be values or attribute values that you reveal. But mind you, at this level, they're all just integers. Then you would have some kind of statement. So the statement would include some constants that you would reveal as well. And then your attribute statement. So this would be sort of the logic of the statements that you could build up. Then I guess potential statements, statements that we already identified, and the list here is not complete. We have some more. but I guess this should be giving you an idea. So one of the statements would be making, okay, so here I have a credential under that's valid from some under some public key of an issuer. But again, mapping the public key to a specific issuer is a high level. Here we just talk about a public key, the cryptographic value of the public key, and the credential would be on attributes M1, M2, M3, and M4. So essentially, that's I guess in some way, another way of I have a signature on these values that is valid under the public key of that issuer. So it's like I guess very low level. If you would call a cryptographic library to verify a signature, that's kind of the input what you would give it, right? So you would call the signature verification algorithm. You would feed it the public key of the or the verification key, and you would feed it the messages that you want to verify. Of course, then we can also have some other statements like an interval saying that like some of your attributes, say M2 lies between a first constant and a second constant. But that's like one thing we could have a statement. You could also say here is also the encryption, like the ciphertext is an encryption under some public key of the third message. We would have like pseudonymous public key. So here is like a pseudonymous public key, and I guess the underlying assumption is that public key would be bound to the same secret key as like user secret key as your credential. You could have a pseudonymous public keys or pseudonyms, sorry, scope pseudonyms or scope pseudonymous public keys. And the idea here is that these pseudonyms are unique per certain scope. So if you want to sort of implement a voting scheme, you would say, okay, so you have to provide me one of your pseudonymous public keys for this vote, and you could not do two different ones. So you're bound to come up with the same one. And so like that, you could sort of prove that you have the right to vote, cast your vote. But if you try to cast your vote again for the second time, then these things would reveal the same pseudonymous public key, so could reject that vote. But if you would participate in another vote, because then the other vote would be the different scope, then you could again prove that you have the right to vote and cast your vote. So that's the idea here. Then we could also have like polynomial relations between some of those attributes, and right. Of course, these terms can be combined. So look at the next slide number 12 as an example here. So here you would prove that you have a credential from some issuer under like these four attributes. The third of these attributes that was signed by the issuer is also encrypted under these auditor keys. And the second attribute that got signed sort of satisfies this the term that today minus the value of that attribute lies between 0 and 18 times 364. So the idea was that would encode the number of days since, 1972. So you could do a range proof like that, and maybe it was also proof that actually here is one of my pseudonymous public keys. So that's how these terms would be combined, and so that's how, I guess, if you have a verifiable claim statement, that statement would be mapped into a CKLang statement like that. Again, any questions so far? Good, then let me just...
I mean, I'm going to wait until you get one more slide, and then I have a couple.
Okay, good. I'll do that. So the next slide is slide number 13. So again, so the mapping from verifiable claims or verifiable credentials to CKLang would you would have to, again, in the verifiable claims you have your eyes, all of that kind of stuff. Whereas in CKLang, you have concrete values. So whenever you map down, you would have to resolve all those URIs. You would have to retrieve all the concrete values. You would have to map, if first name is encoded as a string, you would have to map down that into the integers that get signed. So all of those mapping translations you have to make before, in order to call the CKLang, in order to implement a CKLang statement or call the library. And of course also predicates like over 18 would have to be translated into larger or interval between 0 and 18, stuff like that. So guess that there's a lot of stuff that has to be made concrete when you call the CKLang, but still you don't have to have any knowledge of cryptography. It's all like a sort of resolving in codings and looking up public keys and all of that. Okay, then I guess we can have questions now if they're appropriate.
Yeah. So I wanted to. So I'm very interested in that. I wanted to make sure I pointed you to the original Smarter Signatures white paper, and then I also did a talk updating it. So there, basically, as I see this. This is a dedicated sort of fit-for-purpose smart signature language, and it resembles other smart signature languages in the fact that it has predicates. Basically the result at the end is a true or false based on those statements. It has and or mappings and things of that nature, so it maps very very closely. But I would also encourage you to take a look at the six other kind of starts on predicate languages for signatures that are mentioned in the original white paper or in the presentation, because I think there are some small things you do. I'm not saying try to be a full-fledged, do everything that all the other predicate languages do, but I think there are some things around some of the requirements and considerations that some of them have done that we need to make sure are in ours, but also some features that might be low-hanging fruit that could have a lot of impact on your design and how you do it and how we secure that design and code. So I encourage that. I'm also, sort of separate. Well, I'll let you answer on that one. Are you familiar with the Smarter Signature stuff or the other predicate languages?
Well, not with the Smarter Signature stuff. I just clicked on the link that is in the chat. So I'm printing it right now, and we'll look at it.
Okay. And I can give you the reference to the different projects that are associated with that. The newest one uses Sigma State Math as the predicate language. So they're kind of like in the same way that, you're focusing on a predicate language around the ZK blinding proofs and such, they're focusing it using the Sigma math approaches.
Please send me the links, and then I can look at them.
I'll find it. The other question was, is there any reason why you couldn't use bullet proofs for these range proofs and such, in addition to the CL and the U proof?
So in principle, bullet proofs could be used here as well. Of course, so for bullet proofs, like the generation of those proofs would be much slower than using CL signatures and sort of the generalized Schnorr kind of proofs. But from an architectural point of view, that's all compatible if you wanted to use that.
Okay.
So the idea of CKLang is more like an abstraction of what you have, right? So you have credentials, you have encryptions, sort of bringing those all together, and then I guess the proof of the statement that I have a credential, that this is an encryption. I mean, if you want, you can do that with bullet proofs. You could also use bullet proofs and RSA signatures. I guess it sort of would include all of those things. And if you want, you could do an implementation for X509 signatures and bullet proofs and would achieve the same thing with the same privacy features.
Okay. I just sent a link to the actual slides to my presentation, and it has a couple of more links to various projects beyond that was in my original white paper, including the Sigma predicate language. Manny, your question is up.
I don't know if it's it is a question. So I wanted to link, I don't know if Jan, you've seen this yet or not, but previous attempt at mapping CL signatures to LD proofs. So we had made an attempt a very long time ago with Jason Law from Evernym, and a few of us got together at a previous rebooting of a trust and tried to map CL signatures to verifiable credentials. And again, I'm not suggesting we move forward with this, but this is kind of what we came to. I'm trying to figure out where zkLang fits into the architecture that we have. So I believe that what we said previously was you could use zkLang as that JSON format for it as something that you put in the proof block in a verifiable presentation.
Yes. So maybe let me go through the next two slides, and I guess I can answer your question.
Okay.
And of course, slide number 14 is sort of, I guess, so that's the mapping down from zkLang to the actual cryptographic algorithms. So for each of the cryptographic algorithms, so now at the zkLang, we just talk about the credential, which is really just a signature by an issuer on some of the attributes. And of course, here we could use either RSA, we could use ECC, we could discrete logs, we could use CL signatures. So essentially, we have different cryptographic assumptions, we have different implementations, and from a conceptual point of view, I mean, they're all doing the same thing, right? And then some of them are more efficient if you would use them, others are less efficient, but per se, we can have like multiple things here, right? And of course, I guess the goal is that you want to make sure that all of these things are interoperable. And, but in principle, we sort of design like a framework so that you can different implementations of signature schemes are pluggable, of course, to the extent that things are compatible with each other. Right, and so I guess now for the question how to put these crypto blocks in. Let's go to slide number 15. So here's a sort of like a prover and a verifier, and they would be using zkLang and the library. And I think the flow, how we see that is, so the verifier would send something like a verifiable credential request, and on the prover side you would receive that. I guess you would have to figure out whether you have the credentials in order to satisfy that. You would have to do some mapping. But once you figure out that you can do that, you would translate the verifiable credentials into essentially two objects. It would be the zkLang proof specification. So that essentially determines is what I have discussed before. So that's the statement that you want to prove. But of course, you would also have to sort of pass down all your cryptographic witnesses, I mean, your secrets that are not contained in the specification, because they should keep hidden from the verifier so that they're local to the prover. And so you sort of somehow need to pass down those values as well. So there's really two objects here, two JSON objects. The first one would be the proof specification, and the second one would be the witnesses. And then you pass those down to zkLang. It would orchestrate all the different primitives to realize that proof, and so it would give you back up a zkLang proof. So this is really the cryptographic proofs. In some sense, I mean, in an abstract point of view, it's just a signature on a verifiable credential. It's just now it's sort of like a transformed signature, or it's really this proof. And so that you would then include in the crypto blob of the verifiable credential part. Like, I guess it could be the signature value or however you call that there. Then you would send that over. You would send over the verifiable credential containing the zkLang proof in the crypto blob, would send it over to the verifier. Now, the verifier, again, would take the verifiable credentials back, check whether it actually fulfills your request, his request. If it does, the verifier would derive from that verifiable credential, would again derive the zkLang proof spec, do the same lookup of secret key, of public keys, lookup of how a first name or a last name are encoded, and derive from that the proof spec. And then it would also get the CKLang proof out of the verifiable credential obtained from the prover, pass those two things down to the CKLang proof module, and that would again orchestrate all the cryptography to verify whether that proof actually is a valid realization of the proof spec, and then return up true, yes, this verifies, or false, this doesn't verify. So in some sense, that's like the signature verification algorithm now for this verifiable credential, if you want. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Mano, you had a question in the queue?
Mostly to ask Mike Lauder or Nathan how they believe this is going to express itself kind of in the proof block. So Jan, like that slide 16, specifically slides 15 and 16 are very helpful. My expectation, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Nathan or Mike Lauder, is that we'd end up putting something like 16 in a proof block, along with things like, you know, revocation tails or, you know, accumulators or whatever. Is that what we'd end up doing? Is like slide 16 would go in the proof block with some extra information, and that is how we make it fit into like a verifiable presentation?
So the short answer would be yes. Something like slide 16 is actually what we're using in the signature block right now. And part of the difficulty that we have is the language that's used to express the proof, which is what really involves a lot of the zero knowledge part of the protocol, is very different than what you use to express the signature, which also includes some of the attributes and information out of the zero knowledge piece of the credential. And so the presentation of a credential itself, meaning sharing from the issuer to the holder, looks quite a bit different in terms of the signature block than the process of presenting the proof from the holder to the verifier. And so the language that you see here is around the two parts that need to happen. First is presenting the proof to the verifier, but that would be the ZKL proof spec, like what you see here. And of course, there's the second part is the revocation, which is what you usually do in the zero knowledge witness. And that witness can also be used relative to presenting some information around an attribute in zero knowledge. And so all of these chunks are part of what you would think of as just, oh, that's a CL signature block. But there's some dependencies on the data model itself that have to be adequately expressed in order to make this part of the system work. And that's actually not something that's addressed in too much detail in this slide. Those are some of the issues we've been trying to bring up in the verifiable claims working group that we're not sure how to prosecute relative to JSON-LB. I'm not sure if that's helpful or if it creates more questions than it answers.
Yeah, the way I see this working is, just like Nathan said, in the proof requests and creating proof specs. And the way I also see it is this could make that part more flexible. So you could change or add different proof specs, you know, as time goes on, as signatures change. That's kind of where I see it happening. Does that help Manu at all?
Yes, it does. I added myself to the queue again to ask a different question. So okay, that's good. That helps. The main question, I think both to Nathan and Mike Lauder, are based on the discussion that we had at the face-to-face meeting, the Verifiable Claims Working Group face-to-face meeting, and the decision to move towards something like a verifiable presentation, which allows you to more or less decouple almost completely from the JSON-LD model when doing proofs, when doing things like ZKPs. Like, do you see any concern kind of moving forward? Like, are we doing anything to block the evolving of kind of what's being presented here. I don't think that we are, but I wanted to make sure that there wasn't anything that, that either of you saw that, that doesn't fit into the new, like, verifiable presentation model that we're working with.
Yeah, adding the verifiable presentation object in addition to the credential object, I think, helps tremendously. In terms of issuing a credential from the issuer to the holder, I think we fit in the signature block in terms of what's being talked about with zkLang here. And then the new verifiable presentation object, I think, actually is a much better mapping to what we've been talking about with zkLang for presenting the proof to the verifier or the to the verifier. So I think that that will solve some of the mechanical difficulties. I think the only other question that we have to resolve is the thing that was that Chris and I need to talk about, is in terms of making sure that that this kind of a model fits into the test suite itself in terms of the mechanics. Because when you're presenting a proof to the, instead of presenting or instead of just sharing the credential directly, it does affect some of the things that are in the mechanics of the test suite now. And we just have to make sure that we've covered how a zero knowledge protocol fits into that test suite, like we've covered how sharing credentials directly would fit.
Yeah, Manu, I'm not aware of anything right now that's blocking it. I've been advocating to move to something like this, so hopefully it's the opposite of blocking. It's pushing it forward.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, so I'll speak as far as, you know, looking at some other people approaching sort of the smart signatures and some things that I'm observing. Observation one, which is sort of directly related to this presentation question, is what this information the signature is requesting of the data is often separate from the actual code that runs the predicate. So oftentimes you don't, you know, you may have a large thing that is signed, but maybe it has a hash or some other information that makes it an indirect thing. So you might, you know, have to go through multiple passes to get all of the data. So the first pass is, do you have anything about age? Yes, I do. Second pass is, okay, is age over 21? So there's some things like that, that often happen in these types of languages. And then the second thing that some people have been talking about, I don't know if there's any good architecture answers are, is that they've been keeping explicitly separate the proofs that are Oracle oriented as opposed to, you know, local oriented. So if it's things like there is a remote revocation list, or, you know, rather than doing it as a not statement where you're basically saying, you know, if all of this stuff is true, it's valid, and then just putting in a not statement and then having the you know, the test of the revocation list, they're more explicitly breaking that up because there are a lot of asynchronous problems associated with oracles that may be very independent of the local proof. And so I don't know what the answer is here, but that's part of the reason why I'm hoping the team can kind of look at, you know, some of the other smart signature languages for ideas. And this is, you know, part of why I've been pushing for, you know, for a while now, that proofs is the way we describe these things rather than signatures. So I'm appreciative that Verifiable Claims has moved in that direction. And Q next. Chris Weber, you're next.
Hi. So, I'm hearing an echo of myself, which is weird. I'm just going to put away my headphones. So for me, so this seems really cool. I'm a little bit admittedly confused by some of the examples because it's only because I don't understand enough of the math yet. But that's fine. Like, I spent a long time without understanding how asymmetric cryptography works, and I have a better understanding of it now, but still being able to use something like PGP and stuff like that. But for me, what, you know, especially since Nathan George and I, you know, need to sync up on how we do this for the verifiable credentials test suite, I think what will be really helpful for me is I'm a very examples motivated person. If I could see more examples of here's how we believe are an actual, you know, completed document that's a verifiable credential would look like that we expect that our system can emit and stuff like that, I think that that'll help me ramp up a lot faster. I don't know if that's true for others in the group, but since I'm so examples oriented, I know that that would help me a lot.
So I guess right. I acknowledge that, and then of course some of the things need to be done. I mean, also I guess in terms of next steps, we need to finish. I mean, the spec is mostly finished, but then I guess now we need to put it into code to make sure it really works out, and then we have to have some examples of a couple of verifiable claims, or I guess actually I like the term proof, verifiable proof, or I guess whatever it was. I like that one, and so I guess indeed we will have to do some examples there. We also will have to specify the crypto algorithms. And actually, while I'm speaking, so I guess as a reply to Mani for the pseudonymous signatures, so I think the pseudonymous signatures sort of try to do like take the whole step from verifiable credentials down to the crypto implementation like in one step. Whereas the aim here is really to go in intermediary steps, and then I guess at the low level, I didn't even talk about how we would specify by the actual signature schemes. And but I guess that would be a lower level specification, and of course we would do that specification. But I think that specification is really left to I guess cryptographers who know what they're doing. And I think for at least for this group, my understanding is that the CKLang is probably the right level of abstraction. That's what people need to understand, and how it's then realized cryptographically is like another cup of tea altogether.
Jan, you're next in queue.
I guess I've spoken already, so it's fine.
Okay, Lionel, you're next.
Okay. just first of all, Jan, I guess it came up before that you're going to check what we're writing in the Data Min paper, so I'm going to schedule with you. Just what time zone are you in over the next couple of weeks?
European time zone.
Okay.
Central
and,
European.
Now the comment that I have, I'm afraid it's a little vague, but I hope you'll bear with me. As languages and technology and protocols mature, we end up with a shared understanding of the demands of the ecosystem or supporting environment on the actual transaction. So, for example, every developer today knows the difference between integer and long, which is actually a mathematical distinction, but they understand it as an impact on the digital system that will handle the communication. What I am finding is that on this boundary, as you described it so well, between the actual crypto and math and just having it work like X509 and what SSL did for us, and as somebody said, as Chris said, PGP. In this area in between, what I'm finding is conversation has really coalesced around what people are calling setup time. I think it's what we call interactive versus non-interactive. It's what we call shared secrets or key material. And many people in my conversations and meetings in the blockchain and crypto space talk about Zcash's what they call setup time. And when we talk about zero knowledge, there is a shared understanding that some things need to be curated and shared on both sides, and some things will only come from one side. And perhaps an extremely simple example of this is just hashing, which everyone understands today more or less, that both sides have to have the same algorithm and then they'll trade the hash, and they can independently verify things. So all of that is to say that your abstracted language here, I'm looking at slide 16, attribute count, disclose clauses, I'm thinking that it will help people if they can understand which things here have an impact on both sides, in other words, the revealing side or the proving side, and which primitives do not.
So I guess the proof spec, so that would be impacting both sides, and that of course so if you have a public key there, so I guess if you look at the clause, it says type credentials, then it has like the public key attribute somewhere there, and of course that public key would specify which kind of algorithms you would be sharing, so that would all be specified there. Whereas, for instance, like the CKL witness, that's something that only locally at the prover you have, that would encode all your secret keys, anything that you would not share. And again, the proof is all values that you would share, sort of the output of the hash computation, if you want.
So we're coming quickly to the close, and I warned you it was a little bit vague, but you helped me a little there. In conclusion, then, I think, you know, like we have camel case, like we have different ways of indicating, I think it would be important to people to understand which aspects are shared, which are not, and that could affect the ZKLang language. Maybe I've planted a seed and it's something you can think about.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Drummond, do you have a quick question or...
It's very short. Actually, first, I just wanted to thank Jan. I don't know about anyone else. I found this presentation by ZKLang to be about as clear as anyone has made this very difficult subject. So I really want to thank Jan and Kim, everyone who's contributing to this. And then just quickly ask, on the next up slides, on slide 17, can you give us a rough idea of what you see next steps looking like and how long you think they're going to take? In other words, do you have a milestone date for having a ZKLang spec out for review?
I think our goal is somewhere in the fall. So I mean, it's a little vague, but it's deliberately vague. I guess our motivation to work on this was also it comes from the like Hyperledger project where there's a lot of stuff going on, and right now many of these projects are a bit of a mess in terms of how to deal with crypto, and so we want to unify that, and we feel some pressure from there that if the mess continues for too long, I guess it gets out of hand, so we want to move quickly here, but right now I cannot really commit on any dates, but it's like, so it's somewhere in the third quarter of this year where we want to have stuff nailed down for review.
That's great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jan. So I'm going to close it now with my first. My comment is make sure that in your spec and maybe actually at the code level as opposed to the JSON level, that you have a version number of a version byte. That's what SegWit now does with Bitcoin's script system. I highly recommend that as a good pattern. That way you can rev the language without necessarily revving the spec if you're adding, say, a new opcode or things of that nature. So that'd be one observation for you. Thank you very much for sharing this with us today. I've also put the presentation link up on Twitter. And we'll look forward to working with you and others on ZK proofs and smart signatures and some of these new crypto things that we can do in the credentials world. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Think so. Bye.
Thank you.